Hello and welcome to the Urbanist Agenda, the podcast that drives its own cars. Bicycles. I am Jason from Not Just Bikes, and I'm joined today by John from Bike Curious, the Twitch live streaming bicycle channel. Welcome to the show, John.
Hi, Jason. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So John does a weekly Twitch stream, live stream from a bicycle. So this is like live streaming on a bicycle in an actually really unique way, and we can get into that. But every single Sunday, for the most part, right? Like, you don't miss a lot of Sundays.
Yeah, I think last year I maybe missed, I don't know, 2-3 Sundays. I'm like more dedicated to the stream than I am to my day job, so.
It is actually like impressive, like how regular you are with those streams, because I also do live streaming from a bicycle and I'm horrible. Now, in my defense, you have a lot better weather than I do.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not a lot better. It does rain a lot there.
I don't know. California, though, it's hard to compete.
Yeah, I know, right? I did live in the Bay Area for what it's worth in 98 and 99. I lived in Milpitas, Sunnyvale, and San Mateo. So I have some experience with it. And of course, I worked in tech for a long time, 20 years or something like that. And our U.S. office for most of the companies I worked for was always in the Valley. So I have some experience with that. I do remember it being like in Sunnyvale, 72 degrees and sunny every single day.
Yes.
Which would be a lot easier for bicycle live streaming.
That's a true story.
But anyway, one of the big reasons I wanted to have you on is because I do watch your streams. And it is interesting to see San Francisco again, because again, I haven't lived there in so long, and to see all the changes that have happened. But one of the things that does kind of pop out as being really different than where I live or even the places I go to in Canada is these autonomous vehicles, right? Like, you ride beside self-driving cars on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all over the place. You basically can't avoid them.
Yeah. So what would you estimate, like, the percentage of cars that you experience? How many of them are autonomous vehicles these days?
I don't know. It's probably somewhere around 1%, which when you think about it, though, is like a lot of cars, right?
Right.
Like, I'm in a major city and there's cars everywhere. So it's pretty much every single time I'm going out, even if it's just a short errand and I'm not on my bike or just walking around, like, I'm going to see them around.
Right. And I love the name that you have for them on your stream as well.
Thank you. Yeah, on the stream, we call cars murderers. And so when the self-driving cars started popping up a lot, we just naturally started calling them murder bots.
Yeah, it's very suitable. The murder bots. So anyway, I wanted to have you on to talk about what it's like to actually like live around autonomous vehicles in the state that they're in right now. And there's some articles that we had shared and we were talking about, and we'll get to those as well. But maybe you could just give us like just a view, a high level view for people, because I suspect most of the people listening here will be like me and have never experienced an autonomous vehicle in their life. So tell me a little bit what it's like and how quickly it's come and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. So we started seeing them around the city, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And they always had a driver in them. Like, they always had someone driving them, but you could tell because they were like covered in sensors and like things spinning around and all kinds of lights and all sorts of stuff.
You can tell you have that big LiDAR on the top of it.
Yeah, exactly. And there have been a few brands that you see too. So there's like Waymo and there's Cruise and there's Zooks and there's, I don't know, probably others that are registered to drive in the city. Mm-hmm. So we would see these things around all the time and they would have all their whirligigs and make their funny like noises and stuff like that. And, you know, it was kind of a joke, but we were all kind of in the back of our minds, like dreading like the moment that they would be allowed to operate without a driver in them.
Right.
And then that came like 2 years ago, I think, something like that. And I started seeing them just driving around empty on the streets, like all the time, all over the place. And that's probably the most striking thing, is to like see a car that's driving down the road and no one's in it.
Yeah, not even a passenger or anything, right? It's just...
Yeah, it's just totally empty. And apparently they're doing something with it. I don't actually know what it is, but that was a really trippy experience for sure. I think that's maybe the most mind-blowing part of it, is like just seeing an empty car driving around.
And what are they like otherwise? If they didn't have all the whizzy bobs all over them, like, would they drive differently? Do you notice a difference in the way that these empty cars are driving?
I mean, I would say like in normal kind of day-to-day scenarios, they behave like a very cautious driver around the city. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that they're like pushing speed limits or anything like that. So they're not like going fast. And they tend to behave pretty predictably, even if it's not extremely human-like. You know, they will react to you. You can tell that they like know you're there and stuff like that, which is interesting. Like, I'm not trying to say that they're like safer or less safe than human drivers, but they definitely have different pitfalls and they definitely are safer in some situations.
Yeah, I mean, that's their whole pitch, right? I mean, their whole pitch is all of these people who get murdered by cars every single year, tens of thousands of people in the U.S., I think it's 40,000 a year approximately right now, and they're saying all of those will disappear and we will have safer roads, as well as a bunch of other peripheral things. But their main thing that they talk about all the time is the safety angle. That seems to be the big marketing pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So you're cycling around, right? What is it like to have these things come up behind you? Have you had any like close calls, or are they generally like staying clear of you?
Yeah, no close calls. But like, I think what stands out to me is like, you know, drivers are going to break laws all the time, like human drivers. And it turns out also robot drivers. And like, we're probably all familiar, anybody who's a bicyclist is familiar with the concept of the right hook.
Right.
You know, when a driver traveling in the lane to your left makes a right-hand turn across the bike lane, and that can be very dangerous. That kills, I think, the majority, or I should say, it's the number one cause of serious collisions between drivers and bicyclists, at least in San Francisco.
Yeah, that's typically, well, it usually happens because drivers just not fucking paying attention. Like, they'll cycle right past you, even like honk at you, and then also turn right in front of you.
Yeah.
As if they don't have object permanence or something like that. But it also happens because you're cycling in their blind spot, for example. Or they don't even think they're in the rightmost lane of the driving lane, so they think, I can just turn. You know, they're also not looking for pedestrians, for what it's worth, but cyclists are coming quite quickly there. So yeah, that is very dangerous. And I know that there is infrastructure here in the Netherlands that's been specifically designed to eliminate that, for what it's worth. So for example, you'll have a separated bicycle path and then it will turn to the right when you get to a junction so that a car can turn and the bicycle path is set back a little bit more. So the car has made more of a turn and you're more visible. So those are like infrastructure solutions to that kind of thing. But anyway, you were saying, so how does the right hook affect this conversation?
Yeah, so the law that drivers are breaking, at least here in California, when they do the right hook, is that they're making a right-hand turn from the left lane. You know, there's two lanes, one of them's a bike lane, one's a driving lane, and they're making that right-hand turn from the left lane. And that's obviously illegal. Now, the thing is that like the robot cars do the same thing. Like they make the right-hand turn from the left lane. They don't do it correctly. It's probably because they're trained by human drivers that don't actually know what the laws are.
Yeah. So in California, is the driver supposed to merge into the bicycle lane and then turn from that lane?
Yeah. As you approach an intersection, you'll see that the bike lane demarcation, if it's just a painted lane, will switch from a solid white line to a dotted line. And that's supposed to indicate that it's a merging area.
Right. It gets the dashed line. Yeah. I've seen that. That's quite common in Ontario, Canada, where I'm from as well. Which, I mean, nobody ever does that. And it's actually kind of awkward when they do and they go and they have to stop because maybe there's some people walking or something like that. And then you have to kind of awkwardly decide to go to the left of them. And the whole thing
Classic.
Doesn't work very well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they copy that same behavior, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's such an obvious example of like, they talk about lots of people who are proponents of these cars are like talking about how it's going to make everything safer, blah, 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 blah. But the reality is that like, the people training the cars and engineering them and designing them and building them, they have the same biases as any driver, as any person on the streets. And those biases are dangerous to bicyclists. They're dangerous to pedestrians because they're approaching it from this like car-brained perspective.
Right. Well, I mean, this is actually one of the things that kind of scares me about these things is that there's all these things you can say about self-driving cars, about they got to learn these things and there's so much work to be done. And there's people that say that we'll never get there and other people that say we're just around the corner. But the thing that scares me the most is that basically 100% of all of the training of these cars is being done in the United States, which has a very car-centric focus to things, right? Like everything in the city is very much set around to be like, obviously cars are here and everybody's going to drive. And maybe we'll add some other stuff too for other people outside of a two-ton metal box. And I know they're just going to cut and paste that into Europe and be like, boom, okay, they drive here now. And it's basically going to be like bringing in millions of Americans, dropping them into Europe and saying, drive like you're in America, go.
Yeah, that obviously spells disaster.
Oh, Jesus, I dread the day.
Yeah.
Because I know that once they're working in the U.S., they're just going to be like, all right, let's just do it. Bring them over here. They ride on the same side of the road. Do it. Because I know they're not going to want to do the whole thing over again in Europe, right? They're not going to want to go retrain for another 10 years in Europe just to drive like Europeans.
Yeah, I know like in the U.S., like not a lot of cities have given permission to these, you know, companies to operate their vehicles.
Yeah.
And I think probably San Francisco is maybe the densest and like kind of most chaotic environment that they test in, because they're in like Phoenix, where it's like 70 lane freeways and everybody goes like 120 miles an hour. Like that's a totally different environment.
Well, that's even worse that cars trained in Phoenix, because there is no place in this world that is more car centric than Phoenix.
Yeah, exactly.
It was actually one of the only major cities in the United States that was founded after cars existed. I mean, it was still built to be like walkable around a train station, but it was built after cars were a thing, whereas every other major city in the United States, the other exception being Las Vegas, was built before cars existed. So there was a city there with people functioning for some level of time, sometimes hundreds of years before cars existed. But Phoenix, there were at least cars existing when it was built, and then it only became more car-centric from there. It really is, like, as you say, six lanes everywhere. People drive however the hell they want. And there's not really any pedestrians or cyclists around.
Yeah.
Very few anyway.
So much easier to build a self-driving car that works there.
That is literally self-driving on easy mode driving in Phoenix.
Yeah.
But San Francisco is not, right? Like, it is fairly complicated. It's the city that's been around for a long time. And it was certainly around before cars existed.
Yeah, I mean, I am struck when I visit other cities. I mean, San Francisco is quite dense, but we do have pretty wide roads. And it is still a fairly car-friendly city. I've only driven in the city like, I don't know, twice maybe. So I don't really have a lot of firsthand driving experience here, but it is surprising how wide the roads are. I think that's very striking.
I did notice that the last time I went to San Francisco, it was a while ago. It was probably 8 years ago or something like that now, but I was struck by the same thing. I was like, I don't remember. I mean, I think it was always that way. I know it is because I went back and looked on Street View, but there are a lot of one-way roads too. Like there'll be like a four-lane one-way road going down some what was once a walkable street, right? So mm-hmm. Yeah, but it is still much more complicated urban environment than Phoenix.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this whole thing about ultimately they are trained on human drivers who make human mistakes. And I know that the same thing was found with stop signs, because I know originally they were just stopping like you're supposed to do at a stop sign. You come to the white line, you stop, and then you just go. But nobody does that at a stop sign. If they stop at all, which most drivers don't, they'll inch forward, right? To show that I'm going to go next. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that needs to be done in order to like interact with other human beings. Because when they followed the law, other drivers would just be like, oh, well, they're not going. I'm just going to go. And then they'd be sitting there at the stop sign forever, effectively.
That sounds great to me. You should have left that.
Know, right? Let's
feature, not a bug.
Yeah, I know, right? But I think what's interesting to me, and I know we were looking at some articles and I've added them in the show notes for anybody who's interested. One of the things I've really noticed about autonomous vehicles is that, you know, the whole pitch is that they are safer than human drivers. And there's evidence to suggest that that is probably the case. But what I find interesting is that there's all these mistakes that humans make, especially with inattentiveness or sleepiness and things like that. And these cars don't do that. So there's lots of these cases where humans get into trouble in motor vehicles and the cars don't do that. But on the flip side, there's a whole bunch of situations that these cars get into that humans would never do either. And I think that's one of those things that isn't quite talked about enough. Like they focus a lot on like, well, humans look at their phone and this will never do that. But, you know, this thing drove into like wet concrete, for example, right? And humans, well, okay, some humans drive into wet concrete, but you know what? I'm giving some humans too much credit. But they do things that humans would never do, right? So is this like what you've seen as well?
Yeah, they're just different. It's not that they're perfect. The people who say like, oh, well, they're not going to have this problem are failing to recognize that like they're not going to have a whole bunch of human problems and that doesn't matter.
Right.
They're going to bring a whole bunch of new problems to the table. I'm a software developer. Like, I know how it is to build software. There's glitches. Things go wrong. And these AI systems are extremely difficult to debug because you don't really know what happens inside the machine's brain.
Right.
And so just the amount of complexity that would go into making these things perfect is just unfathomable. I don't see a way as a software developer to make something like this flawless. And you can make it really good for sure, but there's just no way. And the flaws that it does have, they're just going to be different flaws than what humans have for sure.
Yeah. And I think that's the trick, right? And it is a good point. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in artificial intelligence, but I did work in tech for whatever it was, 20 years. And the last job I had was doing machine learning, very different machine learning, but I have some experience with machine learning. And this whole idea that it's a black box is really kind of creepy to me because from everything I had experience with machine learning, there was a bunch of training that went into this machine, this neural network, or however they do it. I assume they're using neural networks of some kind, but I don't know for sure. But the point is, the way this works is that they get all of this training data, which in this case would be a human driving around, and it looks at what that human did, and then it will make its own decisions based on that. But with these neural networks, with these trained systems, you really don't know what they're going to do. You have no idea. It really is a black box. It's not like it's a bunch of if statements to say, if this, do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what creeps me out about this, is that even the people that made them don't know what these things are going to do in a given situation.
Yeah, and I think like saying, okay, well, it's going to have a series of inputs and it's going to react to it somehow. And there's a certain amount of trust we can have, I think, like as a society or as individuals in like what these things can do. But I think what doesn't really get talked about a lot is like, there's a software development life cycle. You add features to this thing over time. And there's no guarantee that adding one feature doesn't completely break something else.
Of course.
Like, there's no guarantee that the creeping up at a stop sign feature, quote unquote feature,
right,
isn't going to like just make the car like go full throttle into a pedestrian at the next crosswalk it sees.
Right.
And there's no real standard for testing these things or oversight on these releases that are going out. So like, who are we to say that there isn't some catastrophic bug that happens because they try to fix some minor glitch, you know?
Of course. And that is the way these trained AI, I hate calling them AI, they're really not, but these machine learning systems work, is that you kind of poke it in one way and then it affects the network. And you're not totally sure what the effects of those networks would be. It's a little bit like, you know, when there's like a new drug out that affects your brain and they don't totally know what's going to happen and they do a bunch of trials. And they don't know if what this does is going to do the thing they expect it to do, but it's going to have a bunch of side effects. And I think there are going to be side effects of any of these things that are done here. And I think we've seen examples of this, right? Like in these articles that we were going over, there's a whole bunch of them. Like this one that happened in, I guess, October, where the cruise car ran over a woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the details of this, from my understanding, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, because I think you have more experience than this with me, people would have talked about it. But the idea here is that this woman was walking and she was hit by a human driver. She went in the way of this cruise car and the car noticed that something was coming towards it and it braked, but it couldn't brake fast enough. I mean, just physics are physics, and it hit her, right? And that was kind of it that Cruise was talking about in terms of like anything that they were mentioning. They're like, oh, the car braked aggressively to minimize the impact. That's a direct quote from them. And they provided news outlets with the video of it, but it ended right after the car hit her. So that is like the, it did what it could. It reacted faster than a human. This is a horrible incident, but boy, isn't it good that this machine could react faster than a human. But it was only later that it came out that actually, you know, maybe they should have shown the video after it hit her, because what happened is she fell to the ground and then it continued driving an additional 20 feet with her underneath. And that is an example there of like, okay, great. It did the thing that a human wouldn't do. It reacted faster. It's safer than a human. But then it continued driving with her underneath, which is the thing that a human would not do. A human would be like, I just hit a person. I wonder where she is before I keep driving.
Yeah. And that like really drove home for me, like the fact that these robot drivers are just going to have different problems. You know, like they're going to expose us to a totally new set of risks that we don't even really know or understand yet.
Yeah. And I think that's the part that's scary to me, too, because that's the thing. They don't have brains, right? They're not intelligent. They react to stimulus that comes into their neural networks, but they don't know that it's like, I hit a woman, therefore she must still be there somewhere. It doesn't think about that.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't even know if they have sensors and stuff to be able to detect if there is something under the car. You know, like they have sensors around the car,
mm-hmm.
but they have blind spots. And I guess talking about the coning thing, I don't know if you wanted to bring this up in a different way.
No, but I think coning is a great thing. There is something else I want to talk about with that, but we can get to that. Let's talk about coning because this is hilarious.
Yeah, it's so good. So I guess first some background since we're going to just launch into it. Safe Street Revel is a group of, you know, traffic safety, tactical urbanist individuals that are friends of mine. And they created this thing called the Week of Cone. And basically the idea is you get a traffic cone and you put it under the hood of a self-driving car and it detects that there's an obstruction and the car just shuts down. It can't drive anymore. Obviously, it's hilarious. They never do it when someone's like in the car. This is just for empty cars. And it's an act of protest for sure. But like seeing the week of cone and like how successful it is to just put a traffic cone in the hood of these cars made me realize that like a driver of a car has so many more responsibilities than just being able to like steer the vehicle and like yes. make it go and stop. Like a driver would just get out of the car and take the cone off and like right. go on their way. It's no big deal.
Right.
But like this is a huge inconvenience for these self-driving cars because they need to send out like an operations team to remove the car from the vehicle. And then they do all this documentation and stuff like that. So like, you know, the job of a driver has not been captured by these systems. But right. what they can do is start and stop, turn left, turn right, whatever. But they can't do all the responsibilities that a driver is like accountable to while they're operating a vehicle.
Yeah, absolutely. The coning thing is just too funny to me. But I think it also speaks to something that it's like, it's the fact that it's a cone that works so well because obstructions are obstructions. But I found that in the case of any kind of autonomous driving, a cone is like this sacred object, right? Like it will never pass a cone. I swear that these damn things are programmed to care more about cones than people.
Yeah, that's probably not wrong.
I think that's genuinely true. That the fact that it's a cone is actually not just a random thing. Because I think if it was just a rock or something, or who knows what, something else that's big, it wouldn't have that same effect because these things are programmed to be like, cones are sacred. Cones are put in places I'm not supposed to go. I will never cross a cone.
Yeah, it really does like short circuit their abilities.
I do love that that's a thing, though. That's just so funny. So what are Safe Street Rebels sort of, it is a protest. What are their demands, if you will? What is it that bugs them so much that they want to effectively turn these things off by putting a cone on their hood?
I mean, I can't speak on their behalf.
I know, obviously. You are not them, but.
Yeah, but I think it's very important that there's a certain amount of oversight that happens over these autonomous vehicles that isn't happening. They want full regression testing for sure. So anytime a new feature is going to go out, there needs to be a third party that's independently going through a testing script that's ensuring that the vehicles are safe.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be harder to release updates. Like they shouldn't be able to just do it on a whim. I think also, I mean, that's like in the longer term. In the shorter term, and they were successful with this with Cruise, is they want their licenses revoked.
Yeah.
Like the people of San Francisco didn't sign up for this. Like we weren't like consulted with. The California DMV has a very small board that controls who gets these autonomous vehicle licenses. And a member of that board is also like an investor or like a co-founder or something like that of like Cruise or Waymo or one of the big autonomous vehicle companies. So there's an obvious conflict of interest in the California DMV, and it allowed these companies to just flood the streets with vehicles. And it just happened overnight without anybody talking to anybody here in San Francisco.
Well, effectively, you're all their beta testers, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Or alpha testers in some cases.
We're beta testers. We didn't sign up for it. We didn't give consent. I mean, it would be one thing if the city was like, oh, yes, you can test autonomous vehicles here. You're going to pay us $50 million a year, and we're going to distribute that to the citizens of San Francisco. I would be like, okay, well, at least the city is like doing their part, making sure we get some cheese out of this. You know what right. I mean? And that's kind of like, I don't know, not the best case scenario, but that's like a good scenario. But the reality was that they just did whatever they wanted, and the board of supervisors like allowed it all to happen until someone died or until someone got hit.
Yeah.
And then it became a big deal. And I definitely think that like the attention that Safe Street Rebel put, or the spotlight that Safe Street Rebel put on the autonomous vehicles by putting cones on them, was a big part of our supervisors and the California DMV actually just going and shutting down Cruise when things went awry.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously they just have too much power. They have too much control. They can push whatever they want because of their billions of dollars.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's the trick, right? I mean, so in that NPR article, it mentioned that when they were deciding to expand the licenses, there were government hearings. Of course, those things are required. And there were, I think it says here, nearly 75 incidents where self-driving cars got in the way of rescue operations, including driving through yellow emergency tape, blocking firehouse driveways, running over fire hoses, refusing to move for first responders. Then the city voted to expand the autonomous vehicle fleet. 7 days later, a Cruise car hit a fire truck. And then 3 weeks later, that woman was run over by their car, right? So this is kind of insane. But the thing that bothers me the most that you got to here, I mean, these are billion-dollar companies. But I think worse than that, there's a lot of money riding on this, right? Like to make this successful. There are billions and billions and billions of dollars that people have put, investors have put into this, and they want to see it happen. And so they are going to do the Silicon Valley thing of move fast and break things. Now, breaking things could be people that get run over, right? In this case, a little bit different than, you know, just Facebook going down for a day. So they're rushing this. They want to get this out. Like, there's a lot of pressure, a hell of a lot of pressure to make these things a reality. And so, for example, as you said, they were driving around with humans for a long time, and then they stopped. They drove around by themselves. If they were still driving around with humans, then the humans could be removing the cones. The humans could be hitting the brake before they drive into, you know, into where the firemen are responding to something. The humans could do something here. But they don't want the humans in there because that's going to slow things down.
Well, it's funny you mention that because, like, I don't remember what article this was, and I'm going to throw out some numbers, so you should definitely fact check me on this.
Fair enough. It's a podcast. We're not going to hold you to it.
Yeah, okay, cool. Just make sure to leave my disclaimer in then. What I read was that there were, like, 3 operations personnel per car on the road that, like, Cruise was operating with. So, like, that means that if they had had one driver in the car, they would have been able to have, you know, 2 fewer employees per car.
Right.
So it actually takes more human power to run an autonomous vehicle than it does to just have someone driving around in a car.
Well, this is the other thing. So this is the other thing that I think a lot of people miss about these AI systems, the AI I put in air quotes here, systems in general. A lot of the times these supposed AI systems are actually just being run by a poorly paid human. And this is the case all across the board.
Yeah, it's like a Wizard of Oz situation, right? Like,
yes,
you've got the
yes.
guy behind the curtain.
Yes, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Well, this is the case. Like, some of these, like, supposed AI websites even are sometimes just literally there's a person in the Philippines or something sitting behind a computer being paid $3 an hour, $1 an hour to sit there and answer this stuff. Like, literally, some of this stuff being sold as AI is some of it's being done by the computer, but a bunch of stuff's just being dumped on somebody in a poor country to do it. And in this case, in the New York Times article that we were talking about here, it had an interesting statement that was a bit of a throwaway in there, but I think it shows exactly what's happening here. There was this situation where there was a concert, I believe it was, and a bunch of cruise vehicles came in and they all shut down at the same time. They just couldn't run. And they blocked up traffic and everything else. And then it says here, Cruise said in a statement on Thursday that it had successfully transported thousands of concert goers that weekend, but that limited bandwidth issues made it difficult for the company's remote advisors to maneuver several of its vehicles through traffic. Which is telling you, these weren't being driven by any kind of computer. There was just some dude sitting at a computer driving a car remotely.
Yeah, that's a real thing. They just drive their cars from an office instead.
Yes.
Like, they're just sitting on Zoom.
So instead of somebody being in the car, there is still a dude there. And from what I understand, these things will drive on their own. And then if it hits a situation where it doesn't know what it's doing, it'll be passed to some dude sitting in a cubicle somewhere and saying, hey, drive this car. I'm in this situation.
Yeah. And I think that happens with a fair amount of frequency. Like, a human will actually take control. And the article that I mentioned about, like, there being 3 operators per vehicle on average or something along those lines, also talks about how frequently these operators have to take control. And I don't have that number off the top of my head at all, but it's on a scale of minutes and not like hours or days. It's on the scale of minutes.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. So, I mean, again, it just really does feel like you people are their free beta testers.
Yeah, it definitely. I mean, that is literally what's happening. We've talked about, like, my wife and I talk about that for sure. Like, why are we being subjected to this beta test? Like, we didn't sign up. We don't even want cars. That's why we live in San Francisco, so that we don't need to own a car. We can, like, opt out of that car culture as much as possible. And yet here we are with robo cars all over.
Well, and I mean, the thing is, putting the cones on is a very effective protest. And I think it really does show how dumb these things are, because I think people can kind of look at these things and think, oh, wow, like, it does that and that. It must be really smart. It must understand things, because they'll just assume, like, if you could do that, then you must know obvious things like what a traffic cone is and if it's on your hood and a problem. So that kind of points it out that actually, no, these things are really, really dumb. And the area of knowledge is very, very narrow. But it also shows just how easily they can be stopped. And this is one of these things that I'm also concerned about with autonomous vehicles, is that, for example, if they're programmed not to run people over, as I sure as hell hope they are, then people can just walk into the street whenever the fuck they feel like it, and these things will stop for them, right?
Oh, I 100% do that. Like, yeah. Even today, I see an autonomous vehicle, like, at a stop sign or a red light, and I'm, like, maybe not going to make it across in time or whatever. I'll just walk out in front of them because I know they're not going to run me over.
Right.
Like, with a real human, you know, it's America. Like, who knows what's going to happen? But with a robocar, I'll just be like, whatever, I'm just going to go out there. I know they know how to deal with this.
Yeah. And I think the thing is, as these things become more prolific and a larger percentage of the vehicles on the road are these cars, I think people are just going to do that. They're just going to be like, fuck it, I'm just going to walk across the street. I know the river will part for me because I can just do it. And that's cool. That's funny. That's awesome. I'm glad that's a thing. That's going to be a problem. Because eventually these companies are going to be like, the fuck, man, we can't just keep stopping for these people who wander in front of our cars. What's going to happen then? How are they going to solve that? Because I know how the automobile industry did this in the 1920s when cars were just killing people. They just invented jaywalking and made it illegal, right?
Yeah.
So what's going to happen here with this kind of situation?
Yeah, I mean, they'll definitely try and vilify it. I mean, they already do try and vilify. They use very strong language talking about the coning incidents, saying that like it's vandalism. We're going to pursue people like under the law, blah, blah, blah. The reality is there's no like legal grounds for them, but they talk a tough game. You know what I mean? They try to make it seem like they're going to use all their lawyers to come harass a bunch of like 20-year-olds putting cones on cars.
It really is the funniest thing ever. The fact that it's even possible is just so funny to me. But I mean, it really is like it's a David and Goliath thing here, right? Like these people are just steamrolling us with their billions of dollars and they're doing whatever the hell they want. They're controlling the DMV. They're making the decisions here as to who's going to be their free beta testers. And the only thing you can do about it is to stick a cone on the hood.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way of fighting back that we have. Like me and the Safe Street Rebel crew, I'm sure we'll go through many iterations of how we can fight back, but definitely we're fighting a losing battle, you know? Like,
yeah.
When there's billionaires at play or like doing their thing, there's just very little that we can actually do about it.
Yeah.
But we can make it very annoying to operate within the city.
I mean, that is kind of a best case scenario, at least not make it easy for them. But it is going to be interesting to see, because I think, again, it's billionaires. It's multi-billion dollar corporations. There's just so much riding on this and it's going to happen. I don't think there's anything we can really do to stop it. And so I think this is where we have to seriously think about what is the future going to look like when these things are pushed through? Like, are we all going to be required to wear like special armbands that they can detect? And if we're not wearing our special armband, then it'll be just like a jaywalker. Why weren't you wearing your armband? Well, yeah, you got hit. Why weren't you doing that? Like, what were you doing getting in the way of these? What is wrong with you? Why weren't you wearing your special reflective armband? And I don't think that's an unreasonable thing. I think that might actually happen. I mean, it is unreasonable, but I don't think it's something that is not possible.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of have it today, right? Because there's all those like intersections where you have to carry the flags. They'll like put those out. And, yeah. I mean, we live in that world today. Thankfully, it's not as pervasive as like it could be. But, you know, get enough billionaires on board with it. And before you know it, we'll all have to like have flags implanted in our brains.
Right. Otherwise, what are you doing out in the street? What are you, crazy? Going out there without a flag in your implant?
This is Elon Musk's utopia.
Yeah. And this is the thing that bugs me. Like, I know they go on and on about these are going to be safer and stop all of these road deaths and all that kind of thing. I don't even know if that's really going to happen because of, you know, of course, other things that can happen here. But it really does feel like this is being done not so much because it's a genuine benefit to the public, but this is being done because people want to make billions of dollars off of it. This is really my view of this. Like, I don't feel like a lot of people are asking for this. I get it that there's lots of people who drive and they don't want to drive because driving sucks, actually, especially driving in traffic, and they'd rather have a computer doing it for them. So that idea I get that people are asking for, but I don't feel that like we genuinely want this.
Yeah, I mean, and that's actually one of the interesting things that I found with like my work with the Safe Street Rebel group is just how much common ground there is. You know what I mean? Like Safe Street Rebel and myself, we just hate cars. You know, cars ruin cities. We just don't want cars here. But it turns out that there's this whole class of people that likes cars and likes them in the city, but just doesn't like technology or this whole like self-driving car thing they see as like a, you know, techno-authoritarian future that they don't want to be a part of.
Right.
And there's common ground there. You know, we work with them. I'm happy to hang out with someone who doesn't like self-driving cars. Even if they like cars, like, hey, we've got this thing in common here. This is powerful. We can use this to our advantage.
Big Ted here. Big Ted.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it. You know, this is actually one of the things that's frustrated me the most. I've been working in tech for, well, I'm not working in tech anymore Now I'm a YouTuber, but I worked in tech for 20 years. And I don't know, I felt like in the 90s, tech was a lot more optimistic. You know, you'd be reading your Wired magazine and we'd be talking about this wonderful utopian future that we were all working towards. And I know that the Silicon Valley show captured this well, where they would always say, like, we're making the world better by integrating data systems into, you know, whatever. And that was the joke. But I felt like the reason that was a joke is because it did kind of work. Like, people genuinely thought, yeah, we're making the world a better place. I feel today that a lot of technology just kind of makes the world suck, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Facebook kind of ruined that for everyone,
yes.
Right?
Like, I feel it is Facebook's fault for what it's worth. It is Facebook. It was the turning point.
Oh, it totally is. I mean, they have not only systematically undermined American democracy with their, you know, business pursuits, but they've repeated the formula in other countries. And I think seeing this happen over and over again, people are pretty jaded about the positive outlook on what our technology has to offer.
Yes. And I think that's completely valid because, you know, both of us have worked in tech, right? You're a software programmer today.
Yes.
So I don't feel like we're technology Luddites here, right? I feel like we're being somewhat realistic and reasonable in our assessment here. But like, technology can be neutral, but things have good outcomes and bad outcomes. And as a society, we have to decide whether the technology is going to have a good outcome for us or a bad outcome. And right now, as far as I see, these are on a path of bad outcome, like really bad outcome, like Facebook level bad outcome.
Yeah, I mean, move fast and break things maybe is like okay when you're like a college student and you've got a budget of like tens or maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars. But when you have a budget of billions or hundreds of billions of dollars and yes. You're throwing it behind this technology, you no longer can break things. Breaking things actually hurts people really badly.
Like legitimately hurts people, sometimes physically, but break things can be like, oops, your democracy's gone. Sorry about that. We'll
exactly.
fix it in the beta.
We got a fix for that coming in the next version. Don't worry.
Don't worry. The fascists won't be able to kill everyone between now and then. We'll get to it.
Oh, yeah, it's not funny, actually.
I know, right? But I was thinking about this the other week where I remember us going to electrical engineering school in the late 90s, and there was so much optimism. In particular, Wired magazine was just full of optimism. It was like, we're doing awesome things. Everything's going to be great. And now I think, yeah, it's really not, man. It's actually kind of shit.
Yeah, things have gone off the rails for sure.
Yeah. So what do we do from here? You're on like the sharp edge of the spear here. So to my audience who's never seen an autonomous vehicle in real life, and maybe it's years before it comes to their city, what should they know? What should they prepare for? What advice can you give us from the future?
Yeah. Buy NVIDIA stock.
It might be too late for that, but you never know. It is insane right now. I don't want to go into a rant about NVIDIA, but I used to work for ATI. I worked for ATI for several years. And so I competed directly with NVIDIA. And then they were purchased by AMD. And AMD immediately sold off the mobile division that we had. And then the iPhone came out. So there were a lot of mistakes made. And when I look back, I think, what the fuck are you guys doing? And so when I see NVIDIA just steamrolling everything here, as now like the largest gains of any company in the history of the United States, I'm like, you just let them get that, guys. Like, oh, anyway. But anyway, what should we prepare for in the rest of the world?
I mean, I'm talking obviously to your audience and my audience when I say this, but like, you know, the ultimate goal is that we want to make our cities livable.
Yes.
And like, I don't see autonomous vehicles as being antithetical to that, but obviously, you know, cars ruin cities, and this is a thing that we need to be focused on. And for me, it doesn't matter if it's an autonomous vehicle or one that has a human driver in or whatever, it's irrelevant. Or what kind of car it is. Are they driving a Tesla or a Mercedes? Or none of it matters.
Yeah.
Cars ruin cities. And we need to be focused on that one, you know, guiding light that whatever we do to reduce our reliance, and, you know, obviously the cars ruin cities thing is a shorthand for saying like car dependency, you know, ruins cities. Car dependency hurts everybody. We need to be looking for opportunities to reduce our reliance as a society on cars. And it's a fight, you know, it's a fight every step of the way. Fighting against autonomous vehicles is good because, like I said, we have common ground with the Luddites. There's people who like driving and who like cars and don't want autonomous vehicles on the roads. great, they're our friends right now. Mm-hmm. Maybe they won't be our friends 10 years from now, but right now they're our allies. And so rallying our community around this idea that car dependency hurts everybody is something that we just need to stay laser focused on.
Yeah. Yeah. And ultimately making cities designed around, you know, people, human scale, and not giant self-driving car highways everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think that's probably as good a place to end on as any. And perhaps we can talk about this again in the future, but I think that's a great introduction to it. And it certainly helped me because, again, and I think most of the audience will be like this, I've never experienced one of these things in real life. So thank you very much for giving us the view of the future, John. Do you want to plug your Twitch channel here for a second just before we go? Because I really do love your streams.
Thanks, Jason. Yeah, I appreciate that. And thanks so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun. So yeah, every Sunday, I'm live on Twitch at 1 p.m. Pacific. That's 4 p.m. Eastern time, 8 p.m. UTC. Mm-hmm. The show is about 3 hours long. I ride around the city of San Francisco. I try to show people the beauty of San Francisco, what it's like to live in the city, what it's like to ride a bike around in it. And I have a lot of fun. Often we have like a theme or a joke that we're exploring together, which is great. But it's really just about celebrating cities and bikes and, you know, everybody can get on board with that.
Yeah. And it's really good fun. So that's twitch.tv/bikecurious. And obviously links in the show notes too. So thanks so much for coming on, John.
Yeah, thanks, Jason.
That's all we have today for the Urbanist Agenda. But if you just can't wait to hear the next episode, I recommend you sign up to Nebula because every episode is uploaded there first. You can sign up at nebula.tv/agenda. And doing so also supports this podcast. Nebula also gives you access to all of the other creators who are on there, which is now over 150 at this point. You'll find videos and podcasts and classes, but there are also Nebula Originals, which are high-budget productions by content creators you may already know on a whole wide range of educational subjects. If you sign up with our link, that's nebula.tv/agenda, then you'll get a discount off a yearly membership. That's $20 off, bringing it down to $30 per year, which is honestly a hell of a deal for what you're getting. Thanks again for listening to the Urbanist Agenda, and maybe next time you'll be listening on Nebula, and then you won't even hear this part.